much funeral. Take the place and put it back in and respect the peanut man. And a badness we approve, we give the people them some real option. Terrorize the people with the gun, them where you sit down. And the youth them want play football over the sub and the clean up land. No war, no man, no free, no man, no one see no worse. Man, them can't make it in a gangster town. Them can't pick no lock, no go grab no phone. We still a world of vibes without weapons around. So mine can go ram them gun yam yo. Where's man? They can make it in a gangster town. China touch a little girl.
Would you be interested in switching your internet service providers to a provider that provides better service of internet service providing than your current provider?
As we're down the street, radio stars are alive and well here on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Thanks for listening.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. What? Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to Labor Radio. I'm your host, Stefan Doucette, always joined with
Mustafa Henaway.
We're here every third Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. here in Montreal on 90.5 FM or else online at ckut.ca. Find us on Facebook, Labor Radio. On Facebook, I said 90.5, I meant 90.3 FM. We're also available through the Labor Radio Podcast Network, where you can find other podcasts like ours. On today's show, Dom Bellissimo speaking about trade union democracy. We don't have much time this month for chit chat. Moose is getting ready to go on a month long trip.
Yes, so. And we'll be reporting from there. So, and some of the labor struggles and warehouses in Italy, hopefully. So, with unions like CECOBAS and people involved in the Amazon workers strike in 2017. So, hopefully, a more international perspective next month.
No doubt. So for this month, we're really happy to speak with Dom. Great interview about union democracy writ large. So without further ado, here's our show.
My people, open your eyes and answer the call of the drum. Freely, more freely, boom. Samora Mashe, Samora Mashe has come. Maputo, Maputo. Home of the brave, our nation will soon be as one. Frelimo, Frelimo, Samora Machel, Samora Machel. Sisters, stand up and sing. Eduardo Montani is not gone. Frelimo, Frelimo, your eternal flame has shown us the light of dawn. Zimbabwe, mama, aluta continua, aluta.
Okay, so we're glad to have on the line with us Dominic Bellissimo. He's a trade unionist with the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation in Ontario, member of the Action Caucus within the Canadian Labour Congress, longtime activist on labour and international solidarity, I think particularly around the anti-apartheid struggle. Long pedigree. We're really happy to have him on today. We're going to talk about trade union democracy writ large, kind of like something that we could easily get into the weeds about. But we're just coming on the heels of the convention of the Canadian Labour Congress, of which I think we were all around it. Dominic was a delegate. So it's the right time, I think, to have this conversation. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dominic.
Thanks for having me.
Just let's get started on the Canadian Labour Congress, and we'll shorten it to CLC from now on because that's going to take us too long to talk. But I just want listeners who are less aware of this to know. So we wanted to talk about the Canadian Labour Congress. But again, just later on, we'll talk about other bodies of labour as well, individual union locals, labour councils, and other such organizations in Quebec. But let's start with CLC. Maybe can you give us like a really brief overview of what the CLC is for people who are not really familiar, but then talk more about the structure, the internal democratic structure. So how people become delegates, where they come from, what their role is in the convention, because this will be important to sort of situate the conversation around the internal democracy there.
Okay, so the Congress is the central labor body for those in English-speaking Canada, made up of about 50 or so affiliates. That means different unions, and the FTQ from Quebec as well. Many of the unions have headquarters in Canada and in the United States, and they're known as the international unions, but they really are only North American in the sense that they are American and Canadian affiliates. Represents just over 3 million. This latest Congress that just completed last week is the first in-person convention since pre-COVID. It attracted nearly 2,000 delegates to debate a range of issues on the resolutions that were sent in by all of the affiliates, on action plans that had been drafted by the staff and by the highest body. The highest body is called the Canadian Council. And we can talk a little bit more about that later, because it has morphed and changed over the past few years. My impression of the convention is that there is a growing realization amongst delegates on the floor that the labor movement has to be more brave, more militant, sharper in its analysis. And we heard that repeatedly from people, not just in the Action Caucus, but also on the floor during the votes. What the convention has tended to do is take 200 resolutions that are submitted to them in the pre-convention period and combine them into 30 or 40 composite resolutions on affordability, on equity, on human rights, on labor rights, a whole range of issues. The resolutions get compiled together. And so debate is not on every single resolution separately, but often on these composite resolutions. Often, I think it goes to the issue of democracy. Often the most contentious issues, Palestine, Colombia, defying back to work legislation, those are sequenced quite low in the agenda. And so the difficulty for delegates is that often we only deal with six resolutions in a time period for the day. And we're really anxious to try and move on to other resolutions, but we spend an hour on a composite general one, which is going to likely pass very unanimously or with just a few opposition votes. And we don't get to some of the more controversial issues. I think, as you said, democracy in the labor movement, if we were to look at it as a process, there have been times in labor's history where there was more democratic practice. And I would say now what I'm noticing over the past three or four conventions is a growing tendency to centralize, concentrate power in the hands of the largest public sector and the largest private sector unions. In other words, once you have the largest five of each of those types of unions, it's very difficult for you to break what it is that they would like to see happen or not happen at the convention. Because ultimately on the floor out of 2,000, they may have 800 delegates or more. They may be more than 1,000 delegates from those larger unions. We saw a growing trend of this kind of centralization over the past few conventions. And it has continued, I would say, even in this convention, when there were attempts to change the definition of a delegate for the future, or inserting in the Constitution something called a double majority vote. It means that at any time, an affiliate that's on the highest body can ask for a double majority vote, which means that you have to have a majority of the unions on that committee representing a majority of the members of the Congress, which would be a very high bar to pass for the smaller affiliates. For example, Ion Education, OSSTF-FESO represents 60,000. But we're a small affiliate when we look at CUPE or STEEL or UFCW or PSAC. Those unions tend to represent 100, 200, or 500,000 members. And don't forget, the largest private sector union, Unifor, is still not back in the Congress. We hear that they're attempting to bring them back. But that's also a question of democratic will, which unions want them back, which unions are not interested in having them back. So I would say that it's been a growing concern, the issue of increasing democracy for grassroots activists, for the past 10 to 15 years. Maybe do we see some alternatives of democracy in action? It's a bit more at the grassroots level, like at the Labor Council level, where you have usually some of your activists that undertake the campaigns. But even then, structurally, they're the least resourced. They have less staff, less money for campaigns, yet they're being asked to do more and more work at the Labor Council level without the resources that they need. And in fact, at convention, I think out of the 100 Labor Councils across the country, I think there were only 70 delegates from Labor Councils, because many of them can't even afford to set aside money to come from their part of the area of the region to Montreal for a convention. It's a quite a costly item.
Yeah, well, let's talk briefly about the some of the constitutional amendments that didn't pass at the convention, because you sort of mentioned them just now, but I wanted to hone in on that because I think it represents something that you were talking about, this sort of tendency away from democracy, because one of the constitutional amendments that was proposed, I think, was basically trying to make it so delegates don't have to come from the local unions, that basically the larger union can just decide who the delegates are, and it doesn't have to come from the specific locals that are affiliated with the CLC, but it will just come from, say, QP proper. So this like takes away sort of the power of local unions to send delegates, and presumably can sort of be a bigger power play on the part of the bigger unions, or of any smaller union in this in another way. But I mean, it has a bigger effect on the bigger unions, presumably. Yeah,
you've identified an excellent point. Constitutional amendments are usually the boringest thing to discuss on the floor of a convention, but they're extremely important. They're not just housekeeping items. Sometimes they are, updating language, modernizing it. In this case, though, they've removed one definition of delegate, which was the local unit of the union, used to be able to receive credentials and choose their own delegates. We'll see in 3 years what impact this change in definition now has. They've changed the definition so that labor councils, federations of labor, the FTQ, and the national body, the headquarters of a union, shall be defined as hosting their delegates. In other words, a union will receive, if they're eligible, to 600 delegates. They may receive all 600 credentials in one national office and then have the ability to choose which of their locals will receive which delegates. They won that amendment on the floor, the Canadian Council, by saying it was trying to block the practice, the undemocratic practice, of busing in 2,000 extra delegates on a Thursday morning for the elections. Now, all of the big unions have done it in the past. In other words, you start the convention with credentials of about 2,000 delegates, and by Thursday morning, as you head towards the election for president, secretary, treasurer, and the two vice presidents, suddenly the floor doubles in size to 4,000 delegates. So they were at the microphone saying, we're trying to stop this practice. Now, we don't really see how that's going to prevent the undemocratic practice of busing people in. You could have taken other precautions. You could have said a delegate can only vote if they've registered on the Monday and if they've been on the floor for a minimum of 2 days, or you could have added language to try and prevent that undemocratic feature of busing in retirees or unemployed members or whomever. But we'll see in 3 years if suddenly smaller locals, academic locals, ones where there may be a few more militants trying to come and challenge the status quo, if they start finding it more difficult to get credentials, we'll see that a constitutional amendment like this one has had a negative impact on democracy and the labor movement. And when I mean democratic practices, I don't just mean that every member should have a vote on every issue and the grassroots rank and file are always correct. No, not at all. I don't want to see us tear apart the labor movement. I want to see us be united in action on class struggle positions. And that's what we in the Action Caucus have fought for whenever we've been together at the conventions. Whenever in a lead up to conventions, putting forward resolutions, we try and think about what's in the best interests of the working class, whether unionized or not unionized. And we would not be well served by having workers leave their unions, decertify, or in fact, having unions raid other unions. That is just a harmful practice that I think is very undemocratic, and we should speak against it. Now, we're talking about democracy, meaning unity in action on a progressive plan. And that was one of the disappointing things that at this convention we saw. The action plans tend to be very good in the preamble when they're critiquing capital, when they're critiquing what the CEOs are doing. But when it comes to the plan, you overwhelmingly see terms like lobby, request, push for, those kinds of adjectives, rather than a more militant or demanding plan with resources attached. Very, very few campaigns are ever discussed at the convention. And so you don't really know at the end of 5 days what the next step is that the Congress is going to work on. And I would say part of the problem then is that it leaves it to the highest body, the campaigns committee, the executive committee, which is already made up of the five largest public sector, 5 largest private sector, to determine how to spend the budget. A few years ago, they spent $15 million on TV commercials to try and improve workers' attitude towards unions. They went way over budget and are still carrying a deficit. And we say if we had spent $15 million on the ground, mobilizing workers, releasing people, hiring organizers, imagine what we could have accomplished in terms of how many new organized, unionized workers we would have met. It's very hard to measure whether public service announcement or warm and fuzzy commercials have an impact. It's very difficult. I'm not saying they don't have their place. Sometimes they do. But I'm not convinced that they should replace on-the-ground campaigning. The other disappointment as an activist internationally was that we had international delegates attending, probably 25 of them, but they were never formally introduced to the convention. In other words, people who have come from Colombia and Cuba and Korea, and they have a militant tradition themselves, trade unionists around the world. But when they come to the Canadian Labour Congress Convention, they're given a forum, which is on usually the Sunday night of the convention. So the convention has not even begun yet. It starts Monday morning. And this year, the international convention was on Sunday night. I would say 1,000 delegates had not even registered yet. They were not there. Many of them had not seen the agenda, and very few of us attended the international forum. It's a bit disappointing because then they return home thinking that Canadian workers are not necessarily as sensitive or interested to their issues internationally as really we should be. That's a bit of a disappointment. I was glad to meet the Colombian. I was glad to meet the Cuban trade unionists. Those were the highlights for me, talking with them and hearing them contribute in other venues away from the convention.
Right. I wanted to talk a bit about, because one of the big questions in terms of democracy, even from outside of the labor movement, but is the way that decisions that get taken in the conventions or whatever elections and so on, whether they're put into motion by the elected and by, you know, the staff, right, and so on. And I think that maybe, like, with your experience working around the anti-apartheid struggle in Canada in solidarity with South Africa, you might have some worthwhile stories or experiences to relate regarding that. Because from what I understand, you've wrote about this, there was like a disconnect between the desire from the rank and file and the sort of the prudence or something, the timidness of the leadership of the CLC at the time. And again, I don't want to, like you said, like make some kind of sainthood out of the rank and file and always put it in opposition with the leadership, because I think that that's right. That can become just a...
can become mechanical too.
Exactly, yeah. And it's sort of like... some people use it to argue against participating in these structures, which is really not the tack that we're trying to push here. But maybe this is like a good example to talk about ways that like pressure has been able to affect change, even when there was like on the books policy that should have required action.
Right, right. So the elections are an excellent example of how little room there is now within something as large as the convention. The election candidates have already been determined long before the convention starts. And if a large affiliate is not willing to support a candidate, even if they were a member of their own union, that virtually makes it impossible for that delegate to get elected. In other words, in the last round of elections, QP told Marie Clark Walker that they were not supporting her again. CUPW was faced with a very difficult challenge of whether Donald Lafleur could win again or not. Ultimately, both of those people stepped back. They did not want to be challenged. Excuse me. In an election. And so they didn't offer themselves in an election the last time. So the four people that are currently in their positions of the table officers now were re-elected, acclaimed. There was not any significant challenge. There were talks about a left candidate running for one of the positions, but it would be a symbolic campaign because without the strength of a larger left, without the strength of a union local or a group of unions helping, it's a very, very difficult challenge to win. What I have seen over the years that has changed, and it cuts down on democratic decision-making. If you structure a convention to only have 2 hours a day to debate resolutions, and the remaining 6 to 10 hours is made up of panelists, guest speakers, commercials, report backs, introductions of action plans. It's very difficult to get the rhythm of a debate going on the floor of a convention if you have such little time to really debate the resolutions that were sent in. And so I recall, and I've seen in practice, hours and hours overseas of delegates hammering out, both from a con and a pro mic, their positions on resolutions. And at least you have the experience of delegates giving their opinions. What I find we have now is the convention is very high-level production with professional companies and music, and it's really done in a way that it becomes a bit of labor convention meets Eurovision. And so it's very hard to feel like we're on the floor of a convention. Now, don't get me wrong, the personal stories that delegates bring to the microphones as an Indigenous woman, as a racialized worker, examples of transphobic behavior, all of those things are extremely important so that delegates are touched with the reality that workers face. However, when we do that for hours, at the exception of debating a sharper plan, when you can't amend an action plan or a resolution sufficiently on the floor, you feel that you're limited in your democratic rights by the process. And we always say that the process should help facilitate democracy. Once a decision is taken, we should be bound by that. We shouldn't revisit every decision. I don't do that in my union. If I'm defeated and a new president comes in, they don't begin re-examining every position that you've taken in your union. So the positions should be binding on everyone. But I find that because less and less delegates have a say in the drafting of the plan, the campaigns, or the resolutions, that you begin debating things that are very, very general, because who is going to be opposed to wiping out hate? Nobody is going to say that they're speaking against that, but the campaigns we pass are not often the sharpest for what workers need. The contribution I made on the floor was, I said, around affordability. Workers are poor. They're struggling. Families are hurting, but they're also fighting back. When you talk to them about the need to roll back interest rates, roll back prices, freeze profits for food companies, they agree with you. Virtually nobody says they have a disagreeing point of view. So those should be the things that the Congress and others in labor really focus on. Equity issues are important, but class is something that's inescapable. We need to make sure that we're speaking to all sections of the working class when we try and put together a plan or a resolution. So it wasn't all negative. There were signs that workers are wanting a sharper fight back. There were, I would say, some missed opportunities by the convention that we could have come out of it in a more united way with what we were going to be doing over the next 3 years. Yeah, let me leave it there unless you have other questions.
I mean, Dominique, maybe one question I had was, I mean, you just talked about it, what some of the missed opportunities and maybe some of the potentials of this convention. You know, the convention is, you know, let's say a barometer of where the politics are within the labor movement, not fully, but, you know, because of the structure and everything we've talked about. But what were for you, were some of the inklings of maybe things, maybe certain things or certain politics or some analysis moving in the right direction and on some things going backwards, you know?
Yeah, Mustafa, you raised an excellent point. The labor movement's analysis, I wouldn't even describe it as being left social democrat right now. I would describe it as being quite mainstream. Take these two examples. During COVID, the slogan at the Congress was, "We're all in this together." Really? The CEOs of corporations were experiencing COVID the same way racialized workers in a meat plant were, or healthcare workers on the front line, or educators in their schools and education workers. No, we weren't experiencing COVID together. COVID exasperated, illustrated the inequities in society. And you would hope that the labor movement's role is to point that out to workers so that they don't confuse workers into thinking that having a union job means you're middle class. Look at the slogan for this year's convention. We've just come out of a post-pandemic, and the Canadian Labor Congress convention slogan was Canada's unions lifting everyone up. Now, it's true, unionization helps workers. They earn generally a higher wage with better benefits, a little bit more security. But I'm not interested in lifting up the corporate CEOs, the wealthy in society. So once again, they look innocuous. They look like they don't have any negative effect, these kinds of messages and slogans. But what they do is they tell workers, it's okay for you to have an analysis that includes voting liberal, occasionally supporting a conservative, sometimes voting the NDP, because we told you the NDP is the party of labor. It doesn't do enough political education work in the labor movement to explain to people about political economy, how capitalism works and doesn't work, who it victimizes, where all these forms of inequities come from. Those, I would hope, would make a very stimulating debate, discussion, series of educationals. Instead, if you say where it looks like it's gone backwards, the labor movement sometimes is being branded like it's a service organization, like it's a Lions Club, the Automotive League. When you have a problem, call 1-800 and your business rep from your union will come to help you. Instead, it should be seen as the union is us. We are the union, and we have a say in how we spend our money, how we campaign, the demands that we put forward. Some of these concepts seem to make sense to us, but they're so difficult to achieve when you don't have that microphone, when you don't have that venue. But when you're talking to delegates away from the convention floor, or when you're in a small group meeting with other progressives, they get it. They see it. We just don't know how to kind of move it forward enough. How do you keep changing the direction of a ship? Well, that's a real challenge for us, especially for us on the left. It's a real challenge to help keep pushing the labor movement to be more relevant, sharper in their analysis, better for workers, whether they're unionized or not, right?
Before we finish off, we've got about 5 minutes left. I wanted to talk about the labor councils in English Canada and the Conseil Centraux and Conseil Régionaux here in Quebec, because this is sort of like historically, or at least recently, especially the place where progressives go in the labor movement and where progressives who aren't in the labor movement go to meet them. So can you talk about that and the role that labor councils have in the labor movement as a whole? Sure. Do you see that going in a positive direction? Are they similarly kind of getting captured by sort of more right-wing leadership and so on?
Let me say they're uneven. Some labor councils have a tradition of militancy, of welcoming progressive ideas. They have no problem passing things like resolutions on peace rather than military spending. But what they all suffer from, I think, is an overload of work, a lack of volunteers, and a lack of resources at the local level. If you think about it, the local labor councils are often made up of 20 different unions sending delegates on a monthly basis. Now, that doesn't always happen in the labor movement anywhere else. In other words, it's understandable that you get people who are on the ground activists being attracted to the labor councils more, because they're not just surrounded by their own union members. They're not just surrounded by their own delegates, their own, you know, comrades that are in their one union. They get exposed to how other unions carry out campaigns, educational work. So I am optimistic about that grassroots level in all parts of the country and in Quebec. It does sound like that's where some of the best activists come from. Their challenge, of course, is that when they are a delegate from their union, they may have to navigate the spaces that are given to them, especially if they're stretching what they want to see happen, if they are in advance of maybe their union's position on a particular issue. I think it's important for labor council delegates to get the resources they need, but more importantly, for them to be able to speak to delegates from other unions when the leaderships are not. In other words, there are always traditional animosities between private and public sector unions of all stripes. Sometimes they stem from raiding. There were episodes this weekend where people were talking about a CSN affiliate, which is beginning to poach or raid members from QP, from SEIU, from PSAC in secure custody facilities. That did not spill over on the floor in any great way. But it could do that when union leaders are not in regular communication with each other on a friendly basis. They're competing with each other sometimes for the same members. At the labor council level, you've got 20 different unions working together on a campaign to keep public health care public, to fight privatization. So regardless of which union you're in, you're united on that political campaign, on that issue. That helps, because often my leadership won't speak to some others that they're having a disagreement with, but you're always at the local level in touch with delegates from other unions. The important challenge is to get activists like the Teamsters and Unifor back. In particular case of Unifor, they play a big role at the local labor council. And so once they were removed or left the Congress, that really weakened the labor council by hundreds and hundreds of delegates and activists across all labor councils, from what I hear, right? I'm still optimistic, but I also have to tailor some of my optimism with there are clear challenges and obstacles for the left. But it is growing. We need to find that next level of what they call a militant minority. In other words, as we age out, I'm heading into retirement. As many of the union delegates on the floor were also heading into retirement, the new vice presidents elected, the equity representatives, the people on the floor looked younger to me than ever. We need to keep finding that next layer of militant activists to take up the struggles. That's what we need to do.
So, well, thanks so much, Dom, for spending some time with us. Obviously, we could go on much longer. This is such a big issue, and I had so many more questions prepared, and I feel like...
you're very welcome, and I apologize for speaking so long. We could have got to more questions.
No, it's not your fault.
Anytime. I look forward to it, okay?
All right. Well, thanks so much, and yeah.
All right, stay well. Next time. Okay, take care.
Que nous. Appelle les Hendek, appelle les méchants, ils seront jamais plus méchants que nous. Appelle les Hendek, appelle les méchants, ils seront jamais plus méchants que nous. Appelle les Hendek, appelle les méchants, ils seront jamais plus méchants que nous. Je vois le temps dégrader son visage. Je les mets en quand j'étais plus jeune. Je l'ai perdu de vue pendant des années. Je l'ai retrouvé sur OnlyFans. Hey, Akrapovic. Dans le drama à la Tony, je laisse ta baby mama à l'agonie. Je raconte les PC tasses dans la BM, car tout ce qui les intéresse c'est les billets. Elle m'a fait croire qu'elle était brésilienne, elle t'a fait croire qu'elle était lesbienne. Tous les deux soirs j'encaisse, mais tous mes espoirs sont en baisse. Tous les mecs qui m'ont donné envie de rapper quand j'étais petit sont en hess. Jamais la tête baissée, je m'en porte politesse. Car la politesse c'est le seul mensonge qui est pas péché. Capitule, j'ai deux trois livres des piqûres. Je suis nostalgique du futur. Ne reviens pas si je t'attends. Ne prends pas ma main si je l'attends. Cocktail, hôtel, problème, oseille. Même quand je suis réveillé, je fais de l'apnée, du sommeil.
Hôtel, cocktail, problème, oseille. Même quand je suis réveillé, je fais de l'apnée, du sommeil. Hôtel, cocktail, problème, oseille.
Je brûle la chandelle, parle de vous. Je les entendais, parle de nous. Je brûle la chandelle. Appelle les Hendek, appelle les méchants, ils seront jamais plus méchants que nous. Appelle les Hendek, appelle les méchants, ils seront jamais plus méchants que nous. Appelle les Hendek, appelle les méchants, ils seront jamais plus méchants que nous. Appelle les Hendek, appelle les méchants, ils seront jamais plus méchants que nous. Appelle les Hendek, appelle les méchants, ils seront jamais plus méchants que nous. Appelle les Hendek, appelle les méchants, ils seront jamais plus méchants que nous. Appelle les Hendek, appelle les méchants, ils seront jamais plus méchants que nous. Appelle les méchants, ils seront jamais plus méchants que nous. Je vois le temps dégrader son visage. Je l'aimais tant quand j'étais plus jeune. Je l'ai perdu de vue pendant des années. Je l'ai retrouvé sur OnlyFans.
Welcome back to Labor Radio here on CKUT 90.3 FM. And we were just listening to our interview with Dominique Bellisso, who's a CLC delegate from the OSSTF, the Ontario Secondary Teachers Federation, speaking to us about a lot of the issues and sort of the importance of the Canadian Labor Congress, internal trade union democracy within the broader labor movement, and some of the challenges, that are currently facing the labor movement at this moment.
So make sure you find us on Facebook if you want links to old episodes, or just give us a shout. We're here 90.3 FM every third Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. Thanks for joining us this month, and thanks for listening.
Cauliflower.
Confusion. Creation.
Pickle. K is for
kitten.
Cam.
Seat. Wait. Van roof. U. Unbearable.
U is for underground.
Oh, yeah.
Umbrella.
T. Trite.
Tremendous.
Torment.
Tire.
C. K.
I can't think of a U one. T.
T.
F is for famous.
Fun. Fumble. M is for Montreal.
MTL 2424 presents Nonstop, a 36-hour continuous dance marathon celebrating nightlife culture, a first in Canada. It starts on Friday night, May 19th at 10 p.m. and ends on Sunday, May 21st at 8 a.m. at the Grand Quay of the Port of Montreal. On the program, 15 of the most exciting DJs from here and abroad, such as VTSS, Jacques Green, DJ Minx, TSVI, Kiernan Laveau, and more. In addition, there will be a free outdoor stage on Saturday, May 20th. Hurry, places are limited. Tickets available at mtl2424.ca. MTL 2424. Another night is possible.
This year for the 9th annual Native Women's Shelter of Montreal Spirit Walk fundraiser, our theme is the idea that with strong foundations in place, space can be created for growth and new life. Join us for a walk on Mount Royal to raise funds so that women staying at the Native Women's Shelter will have access to a healing retreat and other workshops necessary to reground themselves, heal, and put solid foundations in place from which to move forward. Walk with us on June 10th on Mount Royal. For more information, search Spirit Walk MTL on Instagram or Facebook.
Thanks to everyone who donated to CKUT's annual funding drive. Your generosity truly helps keep our engines burning. It's never too late to donate. You can do so by calling 514-907-9424 or going to ckut.ca and hit the green Make a Pledge button at the top. All paid entries will be entered into a grand prize draw. You can pay your pledge and pick up your gift weekdays between 11 to 6 p.m. or by appointments. Call 514-907-9424. Thank you.
Retourner chez soi après une longue journée devrait être sécuritaire et réconfortant. Toutefois, ce n'est pas le cas pour tout le monde. Saviez-vous qu'à Montréal, une sur cinq femmes subit une forme de violence ou une autre d'un partenaire intime? Transi Secours aide les familles à quitter leur foyer violent en leur offrant des services de déménagement et d'entreposage gratuits, du matériel de déménagement, en plus de leur prêter main forte. Nous avons besoin de votre soutien afin de maintenir ce service dans notre ville. Pour faire un don ou pour en connaître davantage, consultez la page de Transit Secours Région Montréal, sheltermovers.com/donner-montréal. Vous avez le courage de quitter, nous vous prêtons main forte.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio. From drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional student and community productions in and around Montreal, the island also known as Jojage in the Ganyagaha language and Munyang in Anishinaabemowin, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah De A, recording from home on Thursday, May 18th, 2023. On tonight's show, the Anarchist Theater Festival returns. Norman Navratsky has penned a play about an otherwise unknown Ukrainian folk heroine.
The historians wrote her out of the books because she was a woman, number one. She was an anarchist, number two. She wasn't a Ukrainian nationalist. And because she was into bank robberies and killing people.
Persephone Productions wraps up its season with a play that dreams about movies. Director Rebecca Gibeon and two of her actors will join me.
Can film movies survive?